listening to Out of the Box Podcast with Rosie Tran. Out of the Box Podcast is online at outoftheboxpodcast.com. We're in SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. And if you enjoy the podcast, the number one thing you can do is go on iTunes and leave a positive comment or rating. That really helps us get the word out about the podcast. So I'm here with a very special guest. He's a comedian, actor, world traveler, and now chief happiness officer, and a friend of mine now living in New York, Arnaud Collery. Arnaud, how are you?
Very good, Rosie. Very good.
Good. I'm so happy to have you on the show. And
thanks.
It seems like you're spreading a really positive message. But before we get into your chief happiness officer work, I want to tell the listeners a little bit about you. So you were working in finance, is that correct, before you took the plunge into the, you know, hippie world of comedy and traveling and other things?
Yeah, no, correct. I had a very business career until I was my late 20s. I arrived in LA, I was 31, so I didn't start comedy until then.
And what prompted you to get into the comedy business from the business world? That's quite a shift.
Right. So a few different things. When I arrived in LA, I first wanted to be an actor, and I did all the casting call, and as everyone in LA doing it. And then I could not get serious in the acting gig. I mean, I would get the occasional French lover or French sweater in a bunch of commercials and a couple of TV shows, but nothing sustaining. And I really wanted to use the fact that I have an accent, and I'm like, okay, how can I stretch myself? What else can I do? And I really try comedy just out of the blue. I had no idea. I would love it so much. It would end up being my life for like 6-7 years. And I just jump in, and one day I just went on stage and something happened. There's this connection, this, you know, I guess zone, the flow happened. And I thought, my God, this is amazing. This is the best drug ever, the best thing ever I could ever do. And I, you know, never looked back for 7 years. It was my life until, you know, I'm not anymore a comedian really for last 7 years now, but 2003, 2004, 2010 was my life.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a different scene than business, so it's interesting, and that's where I met you out here on the LA comedy scene.
Yes, and I loved it. I mean, it was, and especially us, I think, you know, we're minorities. I know I don't look like a minority, but just because
because French, that's a minority out here.
Because of my accent, you know, it's funny. I tend to sympathize, empathize with everyone from a sort of a different planet like me, right? Asian American, Russian American, Latinos American. I think almost everyone around me is either some mixed blood or from a different country. Versus the pure American white boy.
Well, you're actually a pure American because you're saying that you're surrounding yourself with all different ethnicities and genders, and you're a foreigner, and that's as American as it gets.
It's true. And I'm actually so happy now that today we received the birth certificate of my son, and he's an American. My wife is Asian American, actually. But now I have an American son, so I'm a real
congratulations.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I'm just to see the name on his birth certificate, Kaden Masaru Collery. I just feel so proud.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, you left the business to do something I think even more honorable, which is you're doing consulting in the corporate world, and you're bringing a happiness factor. Now, a lot of capitalist corporations are obsessed with profit, and you're saying that bringing in a chief happiness officer and improving the well-being of people actually increases the bottom line.
Yes. So let me backtrack a little bit to tell you how I got in this fascinating field of chief happiness officer. I left the movie business in 2010 or so. I had directed a film, a comedy film, and we had a bunch of awards, but we could not get like real distribution, theater distribution. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's time to move on. For some reason, I'm hitting a wall here. And for about 3 years, 2000 to 2013, I've tried everything else. I say, okay, what's my next thing then? I went to do volunteering in Tanzania. I went back to Japan to sort of create social parties in nightclub and a bunch of things. And then 2013, I found myself working in a tech incubator in South Africa, Cape Town. And there I was working as sort of a chief creativity officer. And one day, a friend of mine say, you actually are the chief happiness officer of this place. You make people happy.
You bring a smile to people's faces. Yeah.
I was the first one. And now it's becoming not popular, but it's becoming a thing. I brought comedian inside the tech incubator once a week. I would bring a South African comedian to make everyone relax. I even transform half of the tech startup guy, become a comedian. I would coach them. And I'm like, oh, there is something there. You know, how joy is important, and joy brings creativity, and it brings us feeling closer to each other. And then I brought lots of my improv background. So actually, it was really bring my stand-up comedy and improved background that makes people feel better. And we saw that it increased productivity, increased creativities, empathy building. And I'm like, there is something there. And I sort of
I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to address something that you mentioned before I get too off topic and forget. You mentioned that joy brings creativity. And I want to focus on that because there's sort of this negative stereotype in the comedy world that to be a creative person, you have to be filled with sadness and angst and anger and all these negative emotions. Have you heard that?
No. It's a very interesting point. What you mentioned, I even remember my comedy coach one time, Greg Dean. You probably heard of Greg Dean in LA. Mm-hmm. And one time he told me, "I know you're too happy to be a comedian." And when I arrived in LA, I was so happy and I had, you know, so much confidence. I was young I have to say that my comedy got better after a few years when, you know, it got difficult a little bit. And so I do believe, this is a very, very important point, I do believe in terms of pure creativity usually happens when you lack something, when something is missing. And it's true that sadness has a very important part to play in innovating, creating. Yet, what I've found is, for the first sparkle of creativity, it seems that a lack of joy, a lack of a lack of being aligned with who you are, is gonna help you to create something. Yet, once you start to create it, if you want to have a team around you and if you want to attract people, then you need to be happier. You need to somehow increase the happiness level of yourself and people around you to keep being creativity or to get your creativity to another level. It's a very interesting fact. So I do believe that the sparkle of creativity happens when there's a downturn in your life, when you lack something. Yet I've seen that in company, that in order to sustain creativity in an existing team, especially, you need to bring joy.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I have had that experience as well as a comedian, where I have created from negativity and lack and bitterness. And I've also created from joy and happiness. And it's a different energy for sure. I think the most pure creativity is that transformation of transforming something negative to a positive and bringing joy from it. But I just wanted to address that comment that you made, because it's a very, very important comment. And I think a lot of creative people think that you have to be doom and gloom and depressed to be making comedy and create creative work and writing. And I really like the distinction that you made. That was great.
And actually, thanks for bringing that up. It's actually a different energy. So yes, you can create out of sadness and depression and blue zone. And yet you can create out of happiness. It's a sort of a different creativity. And it seems that innovation, startup, technology usually get the creativity from the both sides to sustain. And it's true, as an entrepreneur anyway, you're going to go through an emotional roller coaster. So you're going to go through ups and downs.
That's true.
all the time. And you need, actually, what I found out with all my other friends who are entrepreneurs, that you need to be unconsciously attracted by the ups and downs. This is a true entrepreneur or a true artist. You. It's true that I've never met, it probably exists, but I've never met a true artist or a true entrepreneur who was totally happy all the time. There's probably some, but usually they have, you know, their downturn, and then they're feeding on this, and then they have this ability to also go back up. But what is more even important, it's when you have a team around you, you need to insufflate positivity. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this amazing, beautiful quote of Maya Angelou, who said, a social activist, and she said, everyone forgets what you say, everyone forgets what you write, but nobody forgets how you made them feel.
Yes, that's a beautiful quote and true. And I also want to point out what you mentioned, making the distinction, the correlation, excuse me, between entrepreneurship and creativity, because a lot of times people, when they think of entrepreneurship, business, tech, they think of more, I believe, right brain activities, and creativity is a more of a left brain activity, yeah. You know, art, music, singing, dancing, comedy. But I am an entrepreneur as well, and I'm also a creative type and comedian, and they couldn't be more similar. So I think that's something that you mentioned that I haven't heard too much before, but that just hit the nail on the head when you're saying entrepreneurship and creativity. It's the same thing.
It's very interesting, actually, since now I think half of my friends are entrepreneur and half of them are a writer, filmmaker, comedian, and I've always been between those two worlds. And what I've seen, it's also different creativity. The creativity of an entrepreneur type is there to build something. You want to build something for the future. You want to scale something. You want something to grow. Whereas the creativity from a comedian, a writer, filmmakers, or I guess other type of artist, it's a creativity to experience, to express themselves, fulfilled, to be alive. It's a very different creativity, but both of them are very important. And you, like me, we are both artists and entrepreneurs, so we're going back
and forth. We have more roller coasters.
Yes, for the best and the worst.
Exactly. So you were in South Africa. I'm so sorry to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I was in South Africa, and then a friend of mine told me, you're the chief happiness officer, and I had never heard of the term. And apparently, it was a term used 20 years ago during the first internet wave in 2000s, and so there was 100 chief happiness officer in Silicon Valley. And when the economy went down, 2001, 2002, that job sort of disappeared. And in 2013, basically me and a couple of other guys around the world, we sort of reinstate the job. And for me, I mean, there was no better match because I can use everything I love about comedy and joy and improvisation in order to help people to take off their mask and be real and be who they are and be vulnerable and mix it also with what I know about the business world, you know, and the strategy and the deep question and the mission statements. So now my job is basically two things. It's how to increase joy and how to increase purpose in a company, in a team, anywhere in the world.
Well, it sounds like you have very, very motivated people working for you, because once someone has a purpose, then that the sky's the limit. I think that is what creates a lot of the angst and unhappiness in society, is people not knowing what their purpose is or not being aligned with their purpose.
It's exactly this. It's all come down to this, just the alignment with purpose, with what you are inside, what you show to the world. I mean, who said that? I think it's Gandhi who said, you know, someone is happy when what you say, what you feel, what you feel, what you see, and what you think are aligned.
Yes.
And of course, it's difficult, you know, on a day-to-day basis. We're still all of us, we still have our shadows and things. We have our paradoxes. And it's okay to have paradox. And it's, you know, it's what makes us fascinating as a human being. But to be as aligned as possible on a daily basis is, I think, the utmost important thing. I spent, when I live in South Africa and went to Kenya and Tanzania, and I lived a few days with Maasai, the tribe, you know, there are 100 million Maasai in this part of Africa. And for them, the most important thing in life is this, it's to find your purpose. What is it you're good for? And I think we are, especially in America, where milestones are so important of, you know, the car and the money and the house and the birth of a child, maybe those milestones, it's so important. Yet, what's important is the purpose, the alignment, the continuous improvement, the continuous path towards becoming the best version of yourself, right?
Correct.
And that
includes
everything, which is the milestone, but it's also including what you do on a daily basis. Little by little, you're creating your path. You're seeing where you're going. And I think for me, it's the first thing towards happiness, the purpose.
Well, it's actually the first and the last thing. You know, they have the hierarchy of needs in psychology, yeah. And the bottom is, you know, getting food and water and your physical right. needs, and then your emotional needs and love. And at the very, very top of that hierarchy of needs is self-actualization. And that yeah. is purpose. That's the highest. It's almost like you're an expression of God. You know, if I don't know if you're spiritual or not, but you're being man as an expression of God or just an expression of your highest self when you follow that. And as you said, it's amazing, but it's also hard. I know, you know, my purpose is to bring joy and light and love to people and make them laugh and give them good information. But yeah. I get in my dark times too, and we all do, where we go, you know, what is the point of this? What is the point of all this?
and every time you go back to your dark side, I do believe it's okay to remind you, you need to work again. The work is not done yet, right?
Yeah, more work, more work.
And then you can appreciate even more. I mean, we both seen it, and we both live in, because we're comedians. We were able to live those amazing moments on stage and connecting to people and having this amazing conversation and connection because we went to the dark side. Without it, it's impossible. Everyone we know who lives sort of a very neutral life, it's very hard to experience the very high and the very low. So for me, I'm thankful when I go back to the lows. Now the good thing is, with all the work I've done for the last 5 years as a coach, I'm like, I know when I go to a dark side, it's temporary. It's going to make me a better person. It's going to make me a better coach. It's make me understand my work and my own purpose.
Yes. Let's talk about your time in Africa. How much did that affect, you know, what did you learn? How much did that affect your worldview? How much did that affect your creation and creativity and creation of your business in New York?
Oh, it was essential. I mean, on so many points of view, it was not the first time I've been to Africa. In 2011, I went there for 1 month to volunteer with kids. And it was the first time, actually, I did a storytelling coaching. I went there, 2011, I had been looking for many years. I was looking for an NGO that accept me, not as a French teacher, as an English teacher, as a whatever, but I wanted an NGO that accept me as a comedy teacher. And I wanted to bring stand-up comedy to villages. And what I found in 2011, the first time in Africa, was that, my God, when you tell kids they can use comedy to basically have distant perspective on their life, relate to their friends. I mean, it could have been in Africa, it could have been anything else. But what I've seen with the kids the first time in Moshi in Tanzania was that once they start telling the story, they start to really connect with people, because there's something in storytelling where you, and you know that as a comedian yourself, that you sort of take the burden off your life. You put the burden into the world, so you don't feel the weight anymore of your own story. This is why we become comedian in the first place, right? Because there's usually this weight of the story upon us.
Well, you're holding it inside you. You're holding it.
Yes.
And when you let it go out into the universe, you know, it almost frees you in a bit.
Yes. So that's what I saw in Africa. And then, of course, just the fact of being in Africa, you know, and being with those people who have much less than us. of course, now, you know, every time I'm like, and I don't make enough money, or this client doesn't want to pay me what I'm worth or whatever, I go back to this time in Africa. I'm like, I've met people who had nothing, no shoes to go to school. You know, I had to bring the pencil, I had to bring the papers, I mean, some clothes to some kids. And yet they were thanking me with a smile, with their just being happy. And that was the best thank you, right? It's to this day, you know, no client has ever made me so happy than those kids in Tanzania. And then those startup entrepreneurs in South Africa, some of those entrepreneurs had nothing, just a dream. And here they come, they were throwing money at them to just start building a, you know, MVP, minimal viable product, and start their sort of a first tech journey. And what I've seen is like, oh my God, those guys can start from nothing and just have a trust thrown upon them. Because that's all it takes. It's just someone trusting you. It and is, then you can go somewhere.
But that's also a very pure, you know, the way you're describing this, even though you're talking about business or entrepreneurship, it's very, very creative. It's very artistic to me. You know, you're basically taking an idea. This is what I'm hearing from these guys or these women or children. And they're creating that idea from their mind and making it into a physical thing, whether it's a product or a business, or it's pure creation. It's pure creativity.
Pure creativity. I mean, I believe it's the base of everything. The you know, I mean, I'm watching that with my child. He's 3 weeks old, right? And we've not been trying to do anything with him special other than, you know, loving him and taking care of him and talking to him, explaining him things. We went 3 days in the Catskills. Catskills is sort of where you go out of New York when you want to be in the nature. It's out of nowhere. We were in a sort of a cabin. We actually even saw bear coming to our cabin. I mean, it's very beautiful. It's crazy. It was not dangerous because they would not go inside the home. It was, and the kid, you know, we talked to him what we were doing in the Catskills. We came back to New York last night, and I don't know, something happened to the kid in the last 2 days. He's like so much more aware. He start to almost standing by himself, like with his neck for the first time. He's looking at us like he never looked. I do believe the sense of taking him out of his comfort zone, which they say, you know, the kids, especially in the Asian culture, which I spent 4 years in Japan, 2 years in China, 6 months in Philippines. I love Asia. But for instance, they say in Asia, don't take the kid out for 40 days, right? Don't do anything else than leaving him at home. And here we were. We took him out of his comfort zone.
And he loved it.
And he loved it. He went, and now he seems to be much aware. And I do. Creativity is this, right? Creativity is just being outside of your comfort zone, being in a place you don't know nothing about, seeing different view, different perspective. And usually you come back home, and then you put one and one together, and you put two ideas that are from totally opposite ends, and something new is happening. And this is what I, you know, keep doing in my whole life. And actually, my next book might just be about this, about putting different, what are all the experience in your life that you can bring one by one to sort of becoming a new person and see something else.
I think what you said was very important, the different perspective, but not just that. What I'm experiencing from you, the way you're describing it, is an openness to see a different perspective. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can see a different perspective. If you're not open to it, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's exactly this. I mean, my workshop in the corporate field, I used to call them just happiness workshop, and then you know, I still call myself chief happiness officer. And one of the reasons is it's provocative. But of course, some company, they didn't get the happiness thing. So I start to call it purpose and resilience. And then I got even more work. And now I call them, and I'm doing the exact same thing, right? And now I call them change mindset, right? Because that's all it is. It's exactly how you just put it. It's changing the mindset of someone.
You have to be open to change. You know, I've had different points of views, and to basically, there's two ways you can see a different point of view. You can see a different point of view, and you can use it to reinforce your own point of view and close out that new point of view and say, hey, I'm right, my point of view is right, and this other person is wrong. Or you can take a different point of view and say, hey, how is this different than mine? How can I learn from it? Why is it different than mine? And what does it say about me? And what does it say about the world? And what does it say about this person? Asking questions and being open to just, you know, think about it instead of saying, hey, that person's wrong, I'm right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, it's exactly, I mean, when people ask me, what is a coach? You know, how describe your work? Or what's the best way to become a coach? And a coach is exactly what you mentioned, asking the best question. That's all we're doing. It's, we are a question asker machine. That's all we do. That's all we do. Asking the question. We don't tell people what to do. We might suggest from time to time, but we never tell them do this, do this, do this. We just help them to find their own reasoning, their own question, their own thing by themselves, by asking question. And asking question is just this, is how can you change perspective? I sometimes see my role as a sort of I'm a life director. You know, as a director in movies, you are putting the camera right here, and then you put the camera at a different angle, and then you have a different view of the scene. The scene doesn't move. It's still the same actors with the same dialogue, but just because you put the camera in a different angle, you have a different perspective, and the whole mood might change. And it's the same thing when you're a coach or you help people transforming, being who they need to be on their next path. You're just changing the camera angle. And then you help them to see, oh my God, this is how I sound, or this is how I see, or this is who I am.
That is a very good metaphor. And, you know, some people might think it sounds hokey or metaphysical, but it's true. Changing your perspective can change your entire life. And that film metaphor you made is great, because if you shoot someone, you know, from the top down, they look more weak. If you shoot someone from the bottom up, they look more powerful. If you shoot someone in certain lighting, they look more romantic, more soft. If you shoot someone in more hard lighting, they look more harsh, more aggressive. Yeah. So it's the same thing in life. It's like we all have these predetermined glasses that we wear with our, you know, kind of film point of view. And and you're saying, hey, you know, if you're looking down at yourself and looking at yourself from a weak point of view, you can switch the camera angle and be more powerful, right?
It's exactly this, yeah. So I get to use my directing background and comedy background every day as a chief happiness officer / coach.
So you were in Africa, and then you decided to come back and start this business. And
yes,
obviously you're starting from scratch because, you know, you were in the comedy and acting world, and there's challenges that go along with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was quite tough in the beginning. I mean, now there's a sort of a trend, and people get to understand what is chief happiness officer, especially in Europe and Middle East and Latin America, even Asia, actually, and San Francisco. Those are the best places where they get what the chief happiness officer. But in 2014, January, when I started, no one got it. And I sent an email to 1,000 people in France, LA, Japan, my network. No one answered to me. After 6 months, one guy took me out to lunch in New York, and I'm like, great, I'm gonna have my first client, right? And the guy, midway through lunch, stopped looking at me and told me, I get it. Okay, it makes sense. So what you're saying is that you actually can help really company. I really thought, oh no, you went nuts. Okay, that's it. The guy was in finance. The guy was in communication, in marketing, became a comedian. He went to Africa, and now he's a happiness officer. I really thought, Arno, you went nuts. That was the last draw.
No, I can actually help your business by making people happier.
So that was very interesting. And I sort of, I'm like, okay, this is, you know, and especially a comedian, you know, I was on stage saying crazy stuff, but I was on stage saying crazy stuff because I wanted to connect to people, because I was like every comedian, because I was looking for some truth. I wanted to help people to reveal the truth. I wanted to get some deep, intense, real connection. I wanted to be something raw happening.
Let's talk about that connection, because that is something that in society we suffer from really badly right now, is disconnection. Everyone's on their phones. Everyone's, you know, constantly staring at a screen. It seems like we're connecting with people more, but we feel less connected.
Exactly.
So connection is a very important part of that, you know, of what you're teaching.
Yeah, it's people ask me why, you know, why we need chief happiness officer. And I tell them, because we are connected 24/7, because we cannot leave our laptop, because we cannot leave our email, our WhatsApp, our Twitter, Facebook. This is why we need. We didn't need in the 80s, 90s even. We could go home and shut off from the world. Shut the fuck up, right? It could be 6 p.m. and we'll say, I'm going to be with my wife and my kid. And now you can't. Like, people get mad at you, right? Why didn't you mind? And so
why did you text me back? Why didn't you respond?
Right? And we, all of us, we're even afraid that someone sees that we have seen the text, right?
But we didn't respond.
Oh my God. You must have seen I saw my text at 6.05 p.m.
Well, they do that. There's apps, and also on WhatsApp, you can see if the person viewed the message and everything, right? The little check turns blue.
Right. And actually, this is why we need. We totally need this connection. And the first thing I do when we do workshop is, like, they're going to be absolutely no phone for 6-7 hours. And the company say, oh, you know, we need to check a phone for our business and stuff. I'm like, fine, hire someone else. Hire a different consultant. I don't care. I'm here for the long haul in this business. I don't care one more client. And I speak exactly like this to my my client. You can't hold for 6 hours. It's not going to work. You need 6 hours for total transformation. I need to bring you somewhere else. We're going to go on a journey. And if you're going to check your phone every hour during the thing,
It doesn't work.
And, you know, and now, of course, I'm applying the very same rule to me whenever I can for 2 days, no digital contact whatsoever. We know that now. I mean, Adriana Huffington, you know, is talking a lot about this, you know, with her website Thrive and everything she's done. Like, we need to shut off the emails and everything at 10 p.m. We need to make a little bed for the phone outside of our bedroom. You know,
put it has its own sleep. Like a dog bed, right?
Yes. And we need that. We need a little dog bed outside a bedroom in a different room.
Tuck him in. Give him a good night kiss.
Good night kiss. You know, hug him. Give him a lot of French song, like Au clair de la lune, mon ami, whatever you want, Asian song, you know, whatever you want. But then you put him to rest and you say, and in the morning, we all know that, but it's true, we should not check email first. We should, you know, take whatever, coffee, meditation, sports, and 45 minutes after being awake, check our message. And the first thing is not even reacting to message, but writing message. Things we know we want to get done, people we need to contact, we thought about it. And then after maybe 30 minutes, 49 minutes, an hour of it, we can then react to email that was sent to us. But first is time with ourselves, time to put things in the world that you want to happen, and then reacting to whatever is happening in the digital media. So yes, connection is a big part of it.
Well, I want to also address what you just said, which is very, very important, because a lot of people say, I don't have time. I'm busy. I'm a busy professional. I have to check my phone. I have to look at it. You don't understand, Arno. I have to check it. Right. And what they're not understanding is what you're describing, because I do meditate in the morning as well. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 45 minutes to yourself, that's actually going to make you more productive than just manically looking at your phone. Because you're going to be centered. You're going to be connected to your purpose. You're going to be connected to your vision for that day instead of just running around with your head cut off.
Yeah. I mean, every study shows now that we know that multitask doesn't work for productivity in the long term. It might work for some project, a 3 months project. You need to, you know, write a book and work with 2 clients and do this full-time job. I don't know. And yeah, it works. It doesn't work in the long term. So in the long term, if you want to be more productive, you need to think one thing at a time. Shut off your phone. If you work with somebody somehow, if you want to write a book or whatever you want to do, one thing at a time.
Yes, and that's also a way to create connection with not only clients, but people in your life, is to put your phone down. I know when I have my phone and I'm with my husband or I'm with friends, I'm more distracted, I'm less present, and that, you know, it feeds a mania. And there's been multiple studies done now that if you're constantly checking your phone, you know, whenever you get a like on Instagram, whenever you get a like on Twitter or a retweet, it sends a hit of dopamine to your brain. So it becomes a form of addiction.
Yeah. No, it's totally true. I was one of my Dubai clients sent me to a trip in Pakistan, right? Out of nowhere. I was in Islamabad. And my counterpart there, the guy was supposed to help me during the 1 week mission I had to do for this company. The first lunch, he probably answered, I don't know, 100 emails in front of me. And I didn't say, because I just arrived in Pakistan, I have to be nice. You know, it's client, they're paying me money. And I'm like, and then the second lunch, I'll say, okay, this is not going to work out. So you choose. It's fine. We don't need to have lunch together. I can do my own thing. I can be quiet in my own world. But it's not going to work. 5 minutes conversation, and then you text. 5 minutes conversation, you answer email. He said, but you don't understand. I know I have, I don't know, 1,000 emails a day. I said, I totally understand. It's fine. We please just have a separate lunch. I don't mind. I will not be offended. I prefer you do the work. But if you want to do a lunch with me.
Do a lunch with me.
Do a lunch with me. A real lunch. We should go to Wikipedia and write a lunch definition. Right?
Lunch means you're looking at me. You don't have to look in my eyes romantically, but you're looking at me and you're paying attention at least 80%.
Right. You don't have to hold my hand, especially if you're a man.
We don't have to cuddle. We don't have to cuddle, but you know, you can't check your phone every 5 minutes.
Yes. No holding hand, no kiss. I need to touch my hair and see how beautiful I am. Nothing.
So for those of you listeners who can't see him, he does have very beautiful hair. It's like a Pantene Pro-V commercial.
Well, it's still there. We'll see if it's still there in 5-10 years from now. But for now, I'm still lucky.
All right. So you're going in, you meet with your friend. This is before, you know, this Pakistan story, but you meet with your friend for lunch. He says, okay, I thought you went crazy. You actually want to help people with, you know, becoming happier. Did he become a first client, or was there still, because entrepreneurship is very, you know, you're building your business. It's a challenge.
Yeah. It took me 10 months to first, the first paid client, 10 months. And what I did, I said, okay, I need to do something. So after 3-4 months, what I did is I create my own event out of my own money that you might have seen, called standupforpassion.com. Mm-hmm. And it's a storytelling event. It's very much like a TED-like event. We've done 20 events now around the world. And I bring 7 speakers. I coach them to speak in publicly. And I transform people into becoming inspirational speakers. We might do it in LA at some point. We've done it in New York, in Tokyo, London, Morocco, Toronto soon, Brazil, etc. And I build this event in part to get clients, so people know my work, what I'm doing as a storytelling coach, and how I can bring that back to the workplace and extend it and bring more things to become a chief happiness officer. So I had to create an event in order to sort of get known and people to understand what I do. It was a long journey. And then, you know, now I'm fine 4 years in. But yes, it took me, a good 18 months, 2 years to establish myself, and 10 months to get my first paid client.
I want to reiterate that, because a lot of people start a business, they do something for 6 months and they're not having any success, and then they just quit. They're like, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to go back to working a 9-to-5. This job isn't working. This entrepreneurship isn't working. Right. But entrepreneurship is not something that you do and you hype and you get excited and then it dies out. It's a continuing journey that takes, creating events of your own is a very, very creative way and out of the box way to get interest, instead of just the traditional means.
Exactly. I mean, I had my event is called Stand Up for Passion, right? So I got a lot of people coming to me after the event say, oh, you know, we see you doing your passion, you're living your passion, and can I do like you? How can I live my passion and live off my passion? And I had so many people like these coming to me for over the years, and I was not like a sort of a motivational speaker for those people. But then so many people came to me, and I started to put workshop on this, on how to live for your passion and making a living out of it. But what I saw, and I did workshop where I had would only take 10 people in New York. But what I saw is most of those people are people that make 150K a year minimum, have a great career in New York. And they're like, I don't like my job. I'm making a great living, but I want to jump into a passion, something I really love to do, has an impact in the world, and is going to make me good money right away or within 6 months, 1 year. And all of them, I say, it's not going to happen. Are you okay? Are you okay to make, you know, less than 30K for the first 2 years? Are you okay working full-time 24/7? Are you okay? 95% of people say, no, I'm not okay with it. I'm like, well, I lived off my savings. Once again, I used all my savings so my business could get off the ground. Are you okay to use all your savings? And people say, no, I need to get off, you know, from retirement and from planning my next trip around the world or, you know, buying the next shoes or whatever. I'm like, no, put your entire life, your entire savings into your new thing, and then maybe you have a shot at succeeding.
Well, you're saying stand up for passion, stand up for what you want. If you want to have the passion, you know, they're saying, hey, I make a lot of money, but I'm not happy. If you want to live that passionate, you know, passion-filled, purpose-driven life, then you got to take a risk. You can't just say, well, I want to quit my $150,000 job and get another $200,000 job filled with passion.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. I mean, those people who think like this, I'm like, then fine, then keep your job. You have a great career. You already have your own apartment, and it's great. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't say, oh, you know, if only I would just go to a lecture, a motivational lecture, and if I could listen to to something, and for 6 months, I just need to take 6 months, 1 year off. No, it's not just 6 months, 1 year off. It's a total life change.
It's a life transformation.
And this is what I explain basically over and over in this book I just written. Unfortunately, it's in French now. It's called Mr. Happiness, and it's on Amazon, but, you know.
That's okay. There might be some French listeners. So
who knows?
If you're a French listener, he has his book in French.
Right.
Let's talk about your TED Talks. So you've done two TED Talks now?
I just did my third one in France, actually.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That was a month ago. It's not yet published. But the first two talks were in English.
Okay. So your first one was about happiness, I think, or your second one. I don't know the order. And your second one is about storytelling.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about that and the power of storytelling.
Right. So for me, storytelling is everything, which is, one, understanding your story, how to connect the dot, like, you know, Steve Jobs said, and Joseph Campbell said, and many other philosophers throughout the ages, understanding your story, which means going back in time, looking at what you've made, the decision you've made in your professional life, in your personal life, in the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, starting when you were 12 years old, 15 years old. Go back to 100 decisions you made, 100 things that happened to you. Why did you do them? Usually there's a theme appearing. There is a sort of a, in French we say, substantific moelle, something that is essential, that is
part of your life, part of your story, part of your thread.
But and just look at it and accept it. It might be nice. It might be not nice. It might be exactly what you wanted to be. It might be not what you wanted to be, but accept that was your life. That was your story until now. And now you can change. But for me, whenever I mention storytelling, is it's basically to have a snapshot picture of what your life is now. Okay, your life is this. Look at it, accept it. And there's beautiful things anywhere that have happened within that life story of yours. Understand it, extirpate it, stretch it. Try to find what were those key moments that made you aware of this. What were the key moments in your life where you decided, this is what I'm going to do? This is where I'm. I mean, you know, let's for me, when I went to AGI the first time, I spent a year in Japan when I was 18 years old. But for 10 years, I had dream of Japan from 8 years old to 18 years old. One day, I was in classroom in France. My best friend was looking at a strange notebook with strange characters. And I'm like, what is that? My friend said, it's Japanese. I'm like, what is that? He said, oh, this is how they write in Japan. And I was fascinated. And it took me 10 years. But then one day I left everything and I went to Japan. But, you know, if it had not been for that one key moment, and storytelling is this, is to understand those key moments and then reveal it to the world. Why? Because once you reveal those key moments to the world, you have a sort of a deep connection with the universe and deep connection with anyone in the room. And you're going to touch 15 to 20% of the room because they had the same thing happen to them.
I want to mention something that's very, very important about your TED Talk. You're talking about telling stories. Some people listening might say, well, Arno, you're so interesting. You traveled the world. You've been to Africa. You've been to Japan. You're doing Chief Happiness Officer in Rosie. You're a comedian. You've toured the world. Especially you're so Rosie. Interesting.
It's like, oh my God, you get to do Rosie training.
No, but so someone might be listening and saying, oh my God, Reno, Rosie's done all this. Arno, you've done all this, but I don't have a story. I'm boring. I just live in XYZ and I'm just XYZ. And what you say is that everyone has a story. Everyone has a story to tell. It doesn't matter if you feel like your life is boring or you live in the middle of nowhere, or you don't feel like your life is interesting. You have something important to say. You're here and you have a story.
Exactly. I can spend 30 minutes with anyone on her, anyone, and I will find the magical things. And every time I find that thing, people say, but that's not really interesting. I'm like, what do you mean? That's fascinating. What do you mean? That no one lived that. No one through that special resilience thing, that special path. No one's going to want to know about this. And you'd be surprised. Everyone has got one or two or three or five or 100 stories within them that is freaking amazing. The only thing is they don't trust themselves. They don't think the world would have interest to them. And everyone does. It's just to find that one thing. And sometimes it could be this most simple thing that happened to them in their childhood or you know, I mean, I remember being in a workshop and I was talking about this. And it was I can't mention, but a Fortune 500 company. And that woman said, oh, but you know, my family, I mean, nothing happened special to me in my life ever. And, you know, I was really, here I am working in corporate later and, you know, I do windsurf maybe in the summer. There's nothing special. And we talk about her life a little bit just to show to everyone else in the room that she had an interesting thing to say. And then she told me her two parents had cancer when she was 10 years old. And she helped her parents sort of through that by talking to them, being there. Mm. And I'm like, can you imagine? I mean,
that's amazing.
And she didn't think it was nothing. And I could not even believe it. I'm like, can you imagine? I don't know what I would have done if my two parents had cancer when I was 10. I don't know. But you made it work and it's okay. And now they're still alive. It's a miracle. And they said, really?
So many people have so many amazing stories to tell, but not just that, you know, you're talking about something extraordinary. There is, you know, something extraordinary in the everyday, you know, that is what is relatable is who you are as a person. And everyone, we all suffer. We all, you know, feel joy. We all feel happiness. We all feel sadness. So just the nature of you being a human being, you're saying something that's relatable to other people.
Yes. I mean, I actually experienced that even more with the birth of my child 3 weeks ago when he was born. I went out of the hospital like a few hours in just for 5 minutes to get a breath of fresh air, or the next day maybe, I don't remember, because I was staying in the hospital for 3 days with her. I was fortunate enough to be doing that. And I really look at the world like, oh my God, everyone is a winner. Everyone is a champion. Everyone was walking in the street. Just, I don't care. You might have a hot dog stand. You might be even a homeless guy on the street. You survive. You survive that birth. It's magical. You can speak. You can walk. Just this alone is amazing. Just a normal life, basically, is amazing. I mean, one time I brought on stage at Stand Up for Passion a friend of mine, a French guy called Jean Safar in New York. And I wanted to bring him on stage to tell his story. And he told me, but Arnaud, there's nothing interesting about me. I'm the very common guy. I have a corporate job. I have two kids. I live in New Jersey. There's nothing. I'm average looking. Nothing special about me. I'm like, dude, you lived in Japan. You're French. You live now in America. You have a successful business. Your kids are happy. You are happy all the time. The last 7 years I know you, you're always happy, smiling. I say, but it's boring, Arnaud. No, it's not boring. It's fascinating. I'm not happy all the time. I've got my even though I'm a happiness coach, I've got my emotional ups and down. And that's why I'm even more aware of how important is it, happiness. And he's like, but this is bullshit, Arnaud. I said, no, I'm going to bring you on stage and you're going to talk about this. And he talked on stage and he was he killed with his routine, you know. Basically what I do is I build purpose routine. There used to be stand-up comedy routine, but what I do is purpose routine. And just this alone, to understand that every one of us has something to bring to the world.
And we have something to bring to the table. And I think that goes back to what you talked about with purpose. It's important to look at that, because when someone says, well, I don't have anything to offer, or, you know, I'm not special, or some of this negative self-talk, it can really cloud you living out your purpose.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and the first thing I said to those, where did I write this or talk about this? I'm not sure, but I don't know if it was a blog or an interview. What was it? Well, yeah, I think I was with the Huffington Post in Paris, the French version. I was telling them, I say, what's the five advice you have to give to someone to transform their life, change life, live the life they're supposed to do, become the best version of themselves? And I say, first thing first, get rid of your negative people around you. First thing first.
I mean, so important. So important.
50% of people I met don't change life. When I say why, well, my spouse don't really gonna like it, or my family, or my best friend.
I'm like, they want to stay small because those people are holding them small. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry if it's your spouse or your family or your best friend, but they obviously not great people. No, really, and I tell them straight to the they're not great. You might have separated from your family. You might have to separate from a best friend. And maybe she or he will come around in a couple of years. And usually those people do. You know, those people we separate from to become, you know, I mean.
A butterfly. You need to turn into your butterfly. You're a little slug and you need to turn into a butterfly.
My mom is 70 now. And we get along great. But we didn't speak for years. She didn't understand that I left a great job in Paris. You know, I had lived around the world and I was back in Paris. I was 28. I had a great corporate job for a couple of years. And I left for everything with a little bit of savings to go to America to become a comedian. She could not comprehend. It didn't make sense in her mind. You know, she could not understand how someone who go to a country, doesn't speak the language, to do acting, comedy. She could not, and she's a great person, but it was just outside of her perspective, outside of the way she grew up. And now we get along great again.
Yeah, it's important to take a break if someone is holding you down.
Yeah, first thing first, have people with very positive minded around you. Have your best interest at heart. You know, don't tell you cannot do that, but just maybe challenge you. How are you going to do that?
That how is very good. That is a very, very, very good comment you made, because one is negative and the other is open to possibility.
Well, thank you, Rosie Tran. Thank you.
You're the question machine.
Question machine. That's what was my friend told me in Africa. His name was G.B. Miller. He was a guy from Cincinnati, and he was with me as sort of an entrepreneur in residence. And he told me, Arnaud, you're the best question asker of cinema life. And I was like, wow, what a title. Thank you.
All right. Well, the listeners want to hear the other five tips to how to change and transform their life. Number one, get rid of all the negative people.
Yes.
And
yes.
The Number listeners two, want to hear the other ones.
I don't know. Is it too much? Should I give them?
All right. Let's give them three tips, and then if they want the rest of the tips, they need to follow you on social media.
So number two is, here we go again, understand your story. Really go back again, once again, go back to all the decisions you've made or everything that happened to you, positive and negative, and see if there is a thread. Yes, I don't know, what is it, 30% of the things happen to us are not from our choice. The thing happens because life happens, and we are not deciding for what happens to us, but we always decide on how we react to things, right? So look at your decision, how you've done it, what is the thread, understanding your story. Then third, express this story to people, either on a blog, on a video, by a book, by text messages, call old friend, tell them, I think this is my story. What do you think? How do you agree or not? What do you think was the thread? It's a very important thing to you. Go back to your best friend, your family, people you've worked with, your colleagues, people that you trust, your sort of your trust network, and repeat your story back to them and tell them what do they think. And what they do, like they always do, they will add stuff on you. They'll say, well, you might add also that you are, very creative or very inquisitive or whatever that is. So first, get rid of the negative people around you. Understand your story, to reflect back your story to a trusted network of people. And then decide what's the craziest thing you've always wanted to do that you can do now, right? There's always things that crazy thing we that might take years to achieve. But what's the craziest things you can do now? Whether it's to go and spend 2 weeks in a tribe in Ecuador. It's not too far from LA. Everyone can go jump on a plane.
Everyone can join a tribe in Ecuador.
No, I mean, it costs, I've done it. I've done it for 1 month. It costs $20 a night to go with tribe. You can find ticket for $500.
All right. I'm putting it on my bucket list. You convinced me.
Great. Whatever that is to do, the craziest thing, maybe it can be a write a book. Everyone can write a book. Everyone. It takes 3 years to write a book on average, 3 hours a day for 2 years. Everyone, right? Everyone can run a marathon. Marathon, it takes 6 months, 6 hours a week to do. Whatever the experience is. And through that experience, you're going to get new knowledge about yourself, a sort of a renewed passion about what you do.
A new chapter for your story.
A new chapter for your story. And the fifth things I will say is just accept yourself. Accept the way you are now. Accept. You might change, but accept. You. No one is Superman. There's no Superman. Doesn't exist. This is why it's a movie. This is why we love it. There is no Superman. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. We all have flaws. But accept you have amazing things to give to the world. And look at those things and stretch those things, right? And this is like you and I, we had a knack for being on stage and connecting to people. And at some point in life, we became a comedian. What is it, whatever it is about you that is more unique about you, that you have a special knowledge about? And all of us have a special knowledge. Do more of that.
Can I add number six?
Please.
You're saying number five is accept yourself, and I'm saying number six, and because it's not a permanent, maybe it's 5A, maybe it's not six, but okay. you know, it's not permanent. You know, as you said, the more you learn, the more you grow. Another chapter in your book, we're always changing. When you change your perspective, yeah, you change who you are. As long as you're still alive and you're not, you know, unfortunately in the ground dead, you can still create another chapter to your novel of life. You can, even if your 70-year-old mom, you know, my 76-year-old dad, they can still reinvent themselves, create something new, do something new, because we're not the same person we were yesterday. We're always changing, evolving, and growing.
Yeah, yeah. It's perfect. I love your number six.
C'est parfait.
It works. Number six works.
All right, we got to wrap it up. So if you guys speak French, he does have a book called Mr. Happiness. Is it Mr. Happiness or Monsieur Happiness?
It's actually Mr. Happiness. I think they wanted to sound American.
Okay. And then also they can check out your TED Talks online. Yep. And what is your website and social media?
It's my name, arnaudcollery.com. And then they can also check out standupforpassion.com. Twitter is my name, or standupforpassion. What else? Instagram is standupforpassion.
And if you guys have a hard time figuring out how to spell his name, it's very easy, and we'll have all the links on the Out of the Box Podcast website. So go on outoftheboxpodcast.com, and along with this episode, we will have all of his social media if you're interested in checking out more. Guys, this has been Out of the Box Podcast. Please, as always, go on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and listen to us on iTunes. The number one way to support Out of the Box Podcast is to go on iTunes and leave a positive comment. We want positive stars, positive comments, share with your friends. And as always, we're now taking Bitcoin and Litecoin, Ether donations. Wow. So if you're a crypto crazy fan, go on Out of the Box Podcast and you can donate using cryptocurrency. Arnold, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you so much, Rosie. I love it.
This has been Out of the Box Podcast with Rosie Tran.